What was really significant is the sense that a Jewish group comes to the meeting with the Pope and there's an atmosphere of a family reunion. And there's such sort of joy and happiness just to be together that he doesn't actually need to say much. It's just the being and the encounter that makes everybody there feel so wonderful and so excited. And this is not only his remarkable charism as a personality, which we've seen has an impact right round the world, and in a sense a personality that comes to its own with that charism as a pontiff. Because nobody really spoke of him as being particularly charismatic as Cardinal of Buenos Aires.
Almost the opposite.
Yes. So even if the Jewish and Catholic tradition are not identical in its understanding of the concept, we will both say that it looks like the Holy Spirit is at work here. And I think it surprised himself to the degree with which he's been received throughout the world. But it's especially so for the Jewish community. Because even though everybody knows about the Pope John Paul II's childhood and his experiences, by the time he was an adult, there wasn't a living Jewish community in Poland of any vitality to interact with. And this Pope's friendships, writing a book with a Jewish rabbi, with the synagogues and opening up this cathedral for Holocaust commemoration, all create this immediate sense in the Jewish world, and therefore especially for a delegation that meets with him personally, that it's a reunion with a friend that really cares.
In fact, you've said that there's never been a Pope with as deep an understanding of Jews as Pope Francis. How do you think can this deep knowledge affect the relationship?
Well, the biggest challenge for us in our relationship is being able to bring, if you like, the good news to the grassroots around the world. Because in order for teaching, religious institutional teaching, to be able to be truly internalized, you need the correct or the desirable social cultural conditions. So in the United States, for example, where you have two vibrant minorities, even if the Jewish minority is much tinier than the Catholic minority, but they're both minorities, but both nevertheless deeply secure in terms of their presence within that society and the desire to be part of that society, you have the perfect conditions for the internalization of mutual respect, of deepening knowledge of one another, of educating our children about one another. But in places where one of the community doesn't simply appear on the radar screen at all with regards to the other, that's true in certain parts of Latin America, and that's why it's so significant that Pope Francis is now Pope. It also pertains in Israel with regards to the vast majority of the Jewish community. So there are many places where enormous ignorance about one another still prevails. And the historic transformation that took place with the Second Vatican Council is often not known. I even meet bishops in some places that don't know what Nostra Aetate is in terms of its content.
Even though we're about to mark its 50th anniversary.
Well, that will be a very important event and help us address that issue. Yes, so I think it will be a really important contribution. But having both that event, the 50th anniversary, and the fact that we have a Latin American Pope, I think are very important factors in helping bring the impact of this transformation to communities for whom it hasn't been really very germane or relevant to their agenda.
Within the Jewish world, there have always been groups that have been very positive about the Catholic Church since Vatican II and Nostra Aetate. There have also been groups for whom it seemed that everything the Catholic Church did had a hidden agenda. There was always criticism, a lot of scepticism. Do you think this will change under the new pontificate?
Definitely. Whether it changes enough and fast enough is another question, but it's definitely changing. Of course, there are always people who can't take yes for an answer. And then, of course, you know the famous witticism, just because I'm paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not trying to kill me. Well, just because we're paranoid doesn't mean that everybody really does necessarily love us. There are still plenty of relics of a tragic past to be found, and you can see in many parts of the world, including in Europe, a resurgent anti-Semitism. So there's plenty to reinforce historical fears and trepidations. But as a late great colleague of mine, Dr. Jeffrey Wigard, has said, the Catholic Church today is part of the solution, not part of the problem, from a historical point of view. And if you don't understand that, then you're actually not serving your own enlightened self-interest. So this is an enormous educational task we have to do. But there definitely are still some rather ridiculously prejudicial attitudes. Even some publications where I've seen that the very use of the term elder brother by John Paul II or even now by Francis is proof of Catholic prejudice against Jews, because if you read the Hebrew Bible in the Pentateuch, the older brother always gets stood up or done in by his younger brother. And therefore, that's proof that nothing has changed. I mean, there are some people who are going to manage to put a negative image on everything. But thank God, it's increasingly less and less. And the bilateral commission between the Holy See and the Chief Rabbinate of Israel has played an enormous role in that regard. I mean, I'm an Orthodox rabbi, but I would describe myself as modern Orthodox. The establishment within Israel is often pre-modern Orthodox, and therefore is not attuned to the realities of modern life and of the changes that have taken place. The fact that there is now a formal institutional dialogue with the Catholic Church has helped open many eyes and given new understandings, and therefore I think attitudes are changing, and definitely the perception of Pope Francis as a genuine friend will contribute to that process. But we're not going to put aside tragic almost two millennia in just 50 years. This is a very, it's a journey that hasn't just begun. It's a journey of enormous achievements for a very short period of time, but it's still a journey with still more work to do.
Are there any particular events, ideas that you have for marking this 50th anniversary of Nostra Aetate? Anything that you would like to see as a next step?
Well, plenty, but first of all, it'd be a bit presumptuous for me to be able to tell the Catholic world how they should be celebrating their event. But we very much want, and we've been saying in our meetings here, both the Secretary of State with Archbishop Parolin, with Cardinal Koch, the Commission for Religious Relations with Jews within the Secretariat for Christian Unity and others, how much we want to be engaged to the degree that it's appropriate within these celebrations. So first of all, they're just celebrations, celebrations both hopefully centrally in Rome and around the world, events that we can contribute to. If you ask me what I would like, I would like to see a document come out that would not only draw together all the essential teachings that have come out of the Magisterium since the Second Vatican Council, but also clarify some of the complex issues in terms of the nature of our two faith communities. And that would be another milestone in terms of the theological journey, because there's still a big theological question. I remember both Pope Benedict and before him the late Cardinal Martini saying to me that we have still not fully understood all the implications of Nostra Aetate in the Catholic Church. If you say that the covenant between God and the Jewish people is eternal and never to be broken, and of eternal validity, and you say at the same time that full salvation comes through the Christian faith, how do you reconcile those two things, and what does that mean in terms of the status of the Jewish people in relation to the theological, Christological claims? And that may never be fully teased out, and you can answer it, as many do, and say it's just a mystery, we have no answer to it, it's a part of the divine wisdom. But it's, I think, important for us to at least to reflect on it, and to be able to share reflections on that central theological challenge. And that in turn places some questions for the Jewish community. It's true that this is not symmetrical. The church and a Christian cannot really fully understand themselves without understanding their Jewish roots, because that's the foundation of their identity, as the church documents following Nostra Aetate make clear. And it's true that a Jew can understand himself or herself without having to understand Christianity. But quite honestly, I don't think we should. And I think what we should be asking ourselves as Jews is, what does Christianity mean to us? Or if you like, not in the sense, obviously, what does it pose to our faith system? Because if we affirm any Christian affirmations, then we're Christians and we're not Jews, which is a legitimate alternative. But that's not what our goal should be. But essentially to ask ourselves, what is God saying to us in this phenomenon? If I can take from the comment in the New Testament that's attributed to Rabban Gamliel, which is basically a quote from the Talmud, if something that endures and is of lasting reality, then doesn't that say something in terms of divine plan for humanity? And what is the nature of our communities in terms of that divine plan? So we need to reflect on those, obviously, because of the history and because of the problems and because of the tragic misinterpretations of our relationship to one another. It's not been possible for many people to be able to get there. But I hope that now we should be able to. And finally, I think also the other issue, which I think is also developing and where we've got a lot more to go, is not just what we can say, but what can we do together for the betterment of our world. And if we do feel that there's a special bond to one another, don't we have an obligation to be greater than the sum of our different parts? Whether it's a question of addressing the dignity of human life, whether it's the question of poverty, whether it's different areas of science and society, we should be. We have already, for over a number of years, produced a number of very important documents within various bilateral commissions. But we need to be more, I would say, action orientated and focused on what we can really do on the ground.
Pope Francis spoke about that, didn't he, in his words to you. Are there any particular ideas in the pipeline, any perhaps first steps towards this greater collaboration?
Well, we have actually, I don't think it's by chance that Pope Francis did raise that, because we have had a cooperation between the church and the Jewish community in Latin America, and specifically in Argentina, during some of the toughest financial times, in terms of providing small loans and certain areas of where we've been able to contribute for some form of financial rehabilitation. We've even had started, we managed to bring our welfare organizations dealing with a problem of HIV/AIDS and especially AIDS orphans together in South Africa. So many areas where we have charitable institutions which we could coordinate work and become more impactful in there. There's also been discussion of ways in which we can deal with conflicts and maybe try to prevent conflicts. That's easier, again, to speak about than to necessarily act on. But there are ways in which maybe our different communities can leverage their own access and maybe even influence to have some kind of impact in those areas. And last but not least, are issues that relate to our environment, climate change, where maybe we can even, rather than just talk about values, develop certain programmatic initiatives together. I think basically the sky's the limit. It's the matter of finding the effective avenues to work again. And often that can't be done centrally or globally, but it has to be done locally, where there are Jewish communities that can cooperate with local bishop conferences.
Pope Francis is going to Israel in May. My question to you is, what impact do you think this can have? What are you hoping from this trip?
Well, I'm pretty confident it's going to be wonderful and that it's going to be quite stunning because of this amazing charism that Pope Francis has been endowed with since ascending to the pontificate. And even though this visit is going to be much shorter, it's going to be, I think, celebrated by all. Well, what would I think the impact will be? Hopefully, an enormous sense of love emanating from this man to everybody. And in the end, that profound Christian wisdom is the secret to healing conflicts. Because if people really feel loved, then it's easier for them to love one another. Or let's put it differently. If they really feel loved, then it's much more difficult to hate one another.
There's a sense, I believe, that in Jewish tradition, the third state visit by different pontiffs somehow makes this an important milestone in the relationship.
Yeah, there is a Talmudic concept of a chazakah, confirmation. So three times is a confirmation. And that's not just an idiosyncratic observation, because what Francis is doing is reconfirming the confirmation of Benedict. And you could have said, OK, the first visit was an idiosyncratic visit of one whose childhood was deeply associated with Jewish community. You could even say the second pope, especially as a German pope, maybe felt a special obligation in this particular regard. But when three popes now have done it, then you've basically enshrined it in the fabric of the pontificate. And it would be very difficult for any pontiff, any future pontiff, not to follow in those footsteps.
There may be a great sense of love. There's also a great sense of tension as the Pope visits Israel and also the Palestinian territories, and will no doubt speak about the difficulties they face under Israeli occupation. What is your sense here about how he can in any way contribute to a resolution of the conflict?
Well, if somebody was asking me, but nobody has, and I don't think anybody will, I would say that he could do something very bold in bringing the religious leaders locally there together as a witness and as an inspiration to the politicians.
You do already have an interreligious council there, don't you?
We do. We have a Council of the Holy Land that involves both, therefore, Palestinian religious leadership as well as the Israeli religious leadership. And I think it would be only logical if that council were to be engaged. I'm not sure that's going to happen. And from everything I hear at the moment, the program is going to be its most minimal in terms of those meetings that Pope Francis feels he has to have in order, if you like, to keep everybody happy. That might be a missed opportunity, and perhaps the visit could be more powerful than even it's going to be. But even if there are missed opportunities, it's still going to be a great success.